The day I didn't believe my sons after I finished writing this book, I handed it to my family with a strange mix of pride and dread. Every chapter felt like a wound reopened, every confession another layer of skin stripped back. It was all there, my failures, my victories, my weaknesses exposed without disguise. Some were surprised by what I had lived through. None were judgmental. None, except Remy. And he had every right to be. He didn't explode. He didn't shout. That would have been easier to handle. Instead, he looked at me with something far worse, disbelief. "How could you write all of that," he said, "and leave out the one thing that hurt us the most?" In that moment, something cold settled in my stomach. Not defensiveness, not anger. Shame. The slow, suffocating kind that wraps itself around your ribs and squeezes. When you hear what I did, I think you'll agree with him. It was 2005 or 2006. Diane and I had married in 2004 and moved into the house in Grove Park shortly after. We were building something new, two families under one roof, trying to stitch separate histories into one shared future. Remy and Ben were 18 and 19, old enough to be men, still young enough to need their father. Remy had the downstairs bedroom, Ben was upstairs, Caitlin had her own room, Josh and Theo shared. On the surface, we were functioning, smiling at dinner, navigating routines, learning each other's rhythms, but beneath the surface, fault lines were forming. Caitlin had a porcelain piggy bank, traditional, glossy, innocent-looking, a narrow slot at the top where coins and folded notes disappeared inside. The only way to retrieve the money was to smash it. That was the rule. One afternoon, she picked it up and frowned. "It feels lighter." Not slightly, lighter. She took it to her mum and insisted someone had taken money from it. Somehow, impossibly, someone had managed to extract notes through that tiny slit, and in her mind there were only two possible culprits. Ben, or Remy. Diane brought it to me already convinced. She believed her daughter completely. One of the older boys had done it. I turned the piggy bank over in my hands, examined the slot, looked for scratches, chips, signs of prying. I saw nothing. The glaze was smooth, untouched, no visible damage. I tried to reason it out. Perhaps tweezers, perhaps a knife blade, but it felt unlikely. Still, Caitlin was adamant. Diane stood firm beside her, and overnight the house changed. The air thickened, conversations shortened, glances lingered too long. Suspicion crept into rooms before anyone else entered them. It became us and them without anyone saying the words. I wanted it fixed. I wanted calm restored. I wanted certainty. And at that exact moment, the biggest show on television was the Jeremy Kyle show. Public accusations, family betrayals, lie detector tests, truth revealed in dramatic fashion before an audience hungry for resolution. It sounds grotesque now, but at the time it felt decisive, authoritative, final. I convinced myself I wasn't humiliating my sons, I was clearing their names. So I contacted the show, and to my disbelief, for a fee, they agreed to send someone privately to administer a lie detector test in our home. I didn't tell Ben or Remy. Not until they walked through the door from school and found strangers in the dining room setting up equipment. The look on their faces still unsettles me when I replay it. Confusion, then shock, then something deeper, hurt. But they agreed. Maybe because they were innocent. Maybe because they trusted me. Or maybe because, as young men in their father's house, they felt they had no choice. They sat down, wires attached, questions asked. My sons, connected to a machine. Waiting to prove they were telling the truth. I remember standing there, heart pounding in my throat. In that moment, I didn't care about pride or being right. I just wanted the result to clear them. I needed it to clear them. Then the verdict came. They were telling the truth. Relief washed over me so violently I almost felt weak. "It's done," I thought. "Finished. Resolved. Justice served. Now we can move on." Outwardly, the accusation stopped. The subject was dropped. No more raised voices, no more confrontations. But something invisible had broken. Though nothing further was said, I suspect Diane and Caitlin never fully believed the machine. And Ben and Remy, though cleared, had been forced to defend their integrity under interrogation in their own home. Not by strangers, by me. I believed I was restoring order. In truth, I was dismantling trust. What I failed to see then was the long shadow that moment would cast. The quiet alienation. The fracture between Diane and Remy that never truly healed. The disappointment my sons carried, not just that they had been accused, but that their father had not instinctively stood beside them. 20 years later, they still carry it. And when Remy asked me how I could write an entire book about my life and omit the one event that scarred them most, I had no defense. How could I forget? Or perhaps the more honest question is, how could I bury it? As I write this now, I feel the shame I should have felt then. I see two young men who deserved belief, not interrogation, protection, not spectacle, loyalty, not wires attached to their chests. In trying to keep peace, I chose drama. In trying to prove truth, I proved doubt. They were right to confront me. They were right to remind me. And I was wrong.